My argument is with Junior, not you. When he decrustifies, tell him I want to talk. I put the mini bed on the ground and showed them my empty hands while slowly backing away. It would have been a very powerful moment if I hadn't backed off the cliff into the river. As I thrashed through the churning water toward shore, three things occurred to me. One, Junior would never, ever forgive me. Two, my cashmere hoodie was ruined. And three, Mimir owed me a lot more than a quarter.
Alfheim. Speaking of Trolls, by Hearthstone. Ready for the next one? I lip-read TJ's question and nodded. He slid a flashcard with a handwritten swear word on it across the table, then watched me with gleeful anticipation. Smiling faintly, I opened my mind and focused on the Dagaz runestone in my hand. Magic flowed through me like water through a pebbled stream. The stone warmed, and I signed the swear. I felt sound vibrations in the air, then TJ fell back onto his bed, shaking with laughter. I gave him a look and signed three words. Pull yourself together. Right, sorry. TJ grinned. It's just, hearing cuss words come out of thin air like that cracks me up every time. I've never heard the sound of voices. I've rarely uttered a sound either, aside from the occasional sharp intake of breath. Communication had never been a problem, however. My closest friends, Blitzen, Magnus, and Sam, knew ASL, Alf Sign Language, so we conversed easily. When the need arose, they translated for me. But now I was spending more time in Hotel Valhalla. Many in Herjar didn't know or seem interested in learning ASL, except for TJ, who felt that he needed to learn more curses in order to keep up with Halfborn and Mallory. Blitz, Magnus, and Sam weren't always around to translate, and I had an intense dislike for writing down my words for others to read. Because reasons. So I came up with a different way to communicate. Rune magic using Dagaz, the symbol meaning new beginnings and transformations, to convert my signs into spoken words. I touched my tightly closed fingertips together. More. TJ nodded and slid over another card. I'd just opened my mind when he broke my concentration by tapping my leg. He pointed to a thin gold band around my wrist and asked, "Why is it doing that?" The band was a gift from Inga, a lovely Huldr, a woodland being, like a sprite, with a cow's tail and minor magical powers. Inga had once served my family in Alfheim. Been enslaved by, more accurately. I had released her from service the first moment I could. In return, she had made me the bracelet with strands of her hair. She and the band were connected by magic, she had explained. If I were ever in trouble, the bracelet would send her a signal. Likewise, I would know she needed help if the bracelet was twinkling. The bracelet was twinkling. Alarmed, I leaped to my feet and shoved the Dagaz rune into my pocket. TJ grabbed my arm. Hearth, is everything okay? I shook my head and pulled myself free. TJ deserved more of an explanation, but there wasn't time. I had to get to Alfheim. I grabbed my rune bag and raced across the hall to Magnus's room. Inside was an atrium with direct access to Yggdrasil, the world tree. I swung up into its branches and climbed to the nearest entrance to my homeworld. The last thing I saw before I slipped through was TJ staring up at me in confusion. Then I was floating through the intense sunlight of my world. Far below was the weed-choked rubble heap that was once my childhood home. I willed myself to shift direction away from it. Not because I regretted its destruction. Quite the opposite. The place conjured up nothing but unhappy memories. But because I knew Inga would be elsewhere. and wherever she was in trouble. The bracelet conveyed that much with its frantic twinkling. She'd been captured, I feared, and enslaved as she had once been by my family. I landed on an immaculate patch of grass in a picturesque park. The shade trees, duck ponds, trimmed hedges, everything around me screamed perfection, like most things in Alfheim. I kicked up a divot just to leave a blemish, then set off to find Inga. There was just one problem. Alfheim was vast. Wealthy estates like my family manor were separated by miles of open green space. Neat, orderly neighborhoods of smaller dwellings marched row after row as far as the eye could see. It would take weeks to locate her by going door to door, and even if I found the right house, it was unlikely that the homeowners would admit she was there. So, I made an educated guess and cut across the park toward the wealthiest neighborhood. I figured I was on the right track when the bracelet's lights began pulsing faster. Just to be sure, I switched direction. The pulsing stopped. The miniature light show resumed when I returned to my original course. I did a subtle fist pump and hurried on. The bracelet led me to a gleaming white mansion surrounded by lush gardens, well-manicured lawns, and a polished marble wall topped with sparkling shards of glass. Unfortunately, it had a guard shack outside the massive iron gates, so climbing over that wall was out of the question. So was sneaking around to search for another way in. Because, as I stood there thinking, the two guards spotted me. They were old acquaintances of mine. Police elves, Wildflower and Sunspot. And by acquaintances, I mean not friends. Why were police patrolling this mansion, I wondered. Then I saw their rather plain uniforms and skinny billy clubs. They weren't cops anymore, but private security guards. And the last time I'd seen Sunspot and Wildflower, when my father had unleashed a herd of wild nooks on them, they must have lost their badges. It was worth coming to Alfheim again just to see that. I took the direct approach and walked up to the gate, as if I had every right to be there. The guard's eyes widened with recognition and, I noted with satisfaction, a hint of fear. Sunspot darted into the guard shack. Wildflower, meanwhile, produced a bullhorn and put it to his mouth. I assumed he was yelling at me, but since his lips were covered, I couldn't tell what he was saying. And yes, he knew I was hearing impaired. The fact that he used a bullhorn to communicate with a deaf person should tell you something about him. Without breaking stride, I pulled Gibbo, the rune for gift, from my bag and lobbed it at Wildflower. He flinched as the stone bounced off his forehead. Then he blinked, straightened, and offered me the bullhorn. I tucked the horn under my arm, touching my fingertips to my chin and signing, "Thank you," as I walked past him to the gate. Sunspot remained in the guard shack, probably quaking in his rent-a-cop shoes. I pressed a Lagat's rune against the lock. I must have put a little extra magical oomph into it, for the entire wrought iron gate, not just the lock, liquefied into a puddle of molten metal. Whoops. My bad. Halfway to the mansion, I reached for my Daga's rune. I planned to amplify my ASL to speech magic with the bullhorn and pretend to be a giant who had come to collect his long-lost Inga. That plan fell apart when the ground began shaking. TJ's curse word flashed through my mind when I looked behind me and saw the cause of the tremors. Sunspot must have called for backup. It was a huge, hideous troll. How such an unattractive creature had been allowed, much less employed, in Alfheim, I don't know. Protective sun gear covered every inch of him and bore the same security company logo. Even under his dingy white jumpsuit, I could tell he had a massive chest and equally muscular legs, and I could see his yellow teeth and bloodshot eyes through the tinted plastic shield that hung down from his hood, covering his face. His thick-gloved fingers flexed as if they itched to encircle and squeeze my neck. The troll charged me like an angry rhino, a rather slow angry rhino, but still. I dropped the bullhorn and scrabbled in my rune bag for the Algeet's protection stone. Backpedaling wildly, I hurled it at the troll's massive work boots. A shimmering energy shield sprang up. The troll bounced off it like a bumper car and landed on his fleshy butt. The ground shuddered so violently, I almost fell. He didn't stay down long. With a roar so powerful, I felt the sound vibrations. He punched his fist through the shield and came at me again. I hit him with everything I had. Issa, the ice rune, slowed him down by turning the mansion's brick walkway into a skating rink. He stomped his boot, shattering both the ice and the bricks underneath. I tossed the Uruts symbol above his head and dropped a very surprised ox on top of him. He flicked the animal off like a piece of lint and sent it flying, legs akimbo, into a nearby pond. Using my Hagalot stone, I pummeled him with grapefruit-sized hail. Then I blowtorched him with flames I summoned with my Kenot's rune. But he still kept coming. After using so many runes, I was nearing exhaustion. I darted around a corner of the house and hid in a nearby rose bush to catch my breath. Thorny, yet secure, it gave me time to search my memory for a troll's weakness. But I came up empty. As I crouched in the bush, waiting for the troll to kill me, the names my father used to call me echoed in my mind. Worthless. Disgrace. Stupid. I was in danger of falling into a shame spiral when it hit me. Names. The best weapon against a troll is to learn its true name. Like a password, speaking the name out loud unlocks the way past the troll's natural defenses. Its thick hide. Its thicker skull. Its bad breath. Okay, I thought. Now how do I get him to tell me his name? Asking wouldn't work. Even if he understood ASL, I doubted he'd be stupid enough to answer my question. Then I remembered where I was. Not the rosebush, but Alfheim. Elves like to feel superior to others, a skill my father had honed to a sharp, cutting edge. Perhaps a troll who lived here would too. If I could get him to brag about himself, he might let his name slip. I touched Inga's band for courage and emerged from the bush. The troll thundered over, arms outstretched and gloved fingers reaching for my neck. I flung my hands up in surrender. My heart hammered two beats before he lowered his meaty paws.
What trickery is this?
He roared. I feigned confusion, pointed to my ears and shook my head. The troll sneered.
Oh, yes. The deaf elf who can do magic. I've heard of you. Mr. Alderman's brat, right?
Through lip reading and some guesswork, I got the gist of what he said, but I wrinkled my brow as if utterly baffled. The troll circled me, still suspicious. His eyes darted to my rune bag. With a surprisingly quick move, he snatched it from my hands.
Ha! Now you're deaf and powerless!
Smirking, he dangled the bag just out of my reach. I cowered appropriately, but kept watching his lips.
Oh, yeah!
He tucked the bag into his belt.
What has two thumbs and just defeated the mighty Hearthstone?
He pointed his thumbs at himself.
This troll! And now this troll is going to have some fun!
He rearranged his expression to one of sympathy and bent forward, hands on knees, to look me in the eye.
I'm going to pretend to have second thoughts about killing you. First, I'll gain your trust.
He plucked a rose and held it out to me encouragingly. I faked a look of growing hope and took it. The troll smiled and patted me on the head.
Isn't that nice? What's even nicer is how I'm going to kill you.
He mimed opening a screw-top bottle and guzzling its contents.
I'll twist your head off your neck, then drink down all your blood. Yum, yum.
He smacked his lips and offered me a sip from the pretend bottle. Smiling hesitantly, I accepted and mimed taking a swig. On the inside, though, I was dying. Pretending to drink your own blood from your decapitated body has that effect.
And you know what I'll do after that?
The troll continued.
I'll mount your head on a stick and fasten it to my vest, so everyone will know that I, Sears Gruner the Magnificent, bested the famous magic-wielding deaf elf.
I almost gave myself away then, and not just because the troll had let his name slip. Roughly translated, Sears Gruner means cheese butt. You try lip-reading that and not laughing. Instead, I shoved my hand in my pocket and clasped the Daga's rune. With the other, I pointed to myself, and then at the open gate. I can go?
You want to leave? Oh, sure. I don't mind killing you when your back is turned.
He made a shooing motion to hurry me along. Heart pounding, I walked a few paces toward the exit. I had no intention of leaving. I just wanted to move closer to the bullhorn. The Daga's rune was heating up in my palm. It was now or never. I turned back to face the troll. Widening my eyes, I pointed at something over his shoulder. Oldest trick in the book, and he fell for it. In one fluid sequence, I grabbed the bullhorn, hit the on button, tossed Daga's into the air, and spelled out the troll's name in rapid-fire ASL. Sears Gruner! Cheesebutt whirled around, his face contorting in sudden fear. He knew he was weaker now that his name had been spoken.
Who said that?
I dropped the bullhorn and jerked two thumbs at myself. Then I darted forward and grabbed my rune bag. The Tivaz stone, the rune of Tyr, the god of war, practically leaped into my fingers. I used it to transform the rose into a thorn-spiked club. One swing took him out at the knees. A second knocked him unconscious. Once they realized they couldn't hide behind Cheesebutt any longer, Wildflower and Sunspot raced up from the guard shack, their billy clubs at the ready. But the double threat of my rune bag and spiked club sent them running right back to the gate again, and into the hills beyond. My bracelet sparkled.
Inga!
I mounted the house's front steps and banged on the door with the thorn club. Someone inside must have seen everything. The door opened. Inga was shoved out, and then it slammed shut again. Inga leaped into my arms. After a moment, I pulled back and signed, "Are you okay?" She nodded and signed back.
"You were brilliant. They were terrified. They..."
She suddenly froze and stared past me in shock. Tremors shook the ground. Had the troll awakened? I spun and thrust Inga behind me. Then I relaxed. The troll was still lying where I'd left him. The tremors were from a different, but equally disturbing source. Thor.
"Hello, Mr. Elf, Ms. Hulder," he called as he jogged by.
"Hi, Thor," I signed. "Nice shorts." Thor stopped and pointed at his earbuds.
"Sorry, I'm listening to rock. Maybe you should use the bullhorn."
Or I could just sign louder.
"Add in bicep curls for a full body workout?"
Thor hefted his hammer, Mjolnir.
A worthwhile suggestion, Mr. Elf. Well, goodbye.
Thor thundered off. Usually, I'd leave Alfheim just as quickly. This time, though, I didn't mind staying a bit longer. Maybe it was the success of the Daga's magic, or defeating a troll single-handedly. But I suspect Inga's smiling face had something to do with it.
Jotunheim. My eighth grade physics actually comes in handy. By Samira Al-Abbas. I assume you know why I summoned you here, Samira. Odin sat back in his desk chair and regarded me expectantly. I willed myself not to squirm. If it's about how I butt-dialed you during that Inherii acquisition just now, I can explain. See, she was thrashing a lot, and my phone was in my back pocket, and... Odin silenced me with a raised hand. I admit that overhearing your struggle was unsettling. Such an excessive amount of grunting and cursing. It reminded me of my survival training seminar with Bear Grylls, who is not, incidentally, an actual bear. But I digress. He leaned forward over his desk. I have a new job for you. A thrill shot up my spine. Since becoming Odin's Valkyrie in charge of special assignments, I'd gone on several dangerous missions. No doubt this next one would prove just as challenging. Whatever it is, Lord Odin, I replied fervently, I'm your Valkyrie. He nodded with satisfaction. Excellent. He opened a folder and slid a grainy photograph across the desk to me. Tell me, what do you make of that? I studied the image carefully. It's an egg. He rolled his hand, encouraging me to continue. A red egg. In a nest. Exactly. But not just any egg. He picked up a remote and pushed a button. A video screen descended from the spear-enhanced ceiling and locked into place. He pushed another button. Images of wolves, giants, gods, and weapons flashed across the screen. Then a title. The Signs of Ragnarok. Doomed if you know them, doomed if you don't. I groaned inwardly. I'd sat through Odin's instructional video when I first became a Valkyrie. I saw it a second time after I helped reshackle the dreaded killer Fenris Wolf on Lingvi, the Isle of Heather. Then, once more after I'd inadvertently aided my father Loki, a vile trickster, to escape his imprisonment. And after Loki was recaptured, yep, got to see it again. To my immense relief, Odin fast-forwarded past the early warning signs, the death of his beloved son Baldur, the 3 years of endless snow and ice known as Fimbulwinter, and the wolves who swallow the sun and the moon. He paused on a shot of 3 roosters. According to all sources, one sign of Ragnarok is the crowing of these roosters. He circled each bird with a laser pointer as he identified it. Gulinkambi, who will hatch right here in Asgard. Fialar, whose egg resides in Jotunheim. And Nameless, the future foul fowl of Helheim. I raised my hand tentatively. Excuse me, sir. Just to clarify, the rooster's name is Nameless? It has no name. So I named it Nameless. Oh. Odin stood up and paced the room. In a recent scan of the 9 worlds, I confirmed that Gulinkambi and Nameless are still in egg form, which is good. Very good. Because they are unlikely to herald Ragnarok while in their shells. His piercing blue eye flicked over to me. It's the third egg that has me concerned. I picked up the photo. The egg of Fialar, in Jotunheim. That photo was taken 3 months ago by... Well, you don't need to know that. But now the Earth Giants have blocked my view of the nest with their distortion magic. I suspect they are hiding something from me. That's where you come in. My heart leapt with excitement. Odin was sending me to fight the Jotuns in Jotunheim. I jumped up and summoned my spear of light. It blazed with anticipation. I won't let you down, sir. I'll take care of those giants and their wretched sorcery. Ah, no. Odin handed me a Valkyrie Vision body cam. I need you to take a new photo of the egg, so I can see if it is beginning to hatch. My spear dimmed. Oh. He raised an eyebrow. It's an important job, likely fraught with danger. Oh, sure, I agreed. Snapping a pic of an egg in a nest would be, obviously. I'll be on my way, then. Take a mount if you wish, but you will need to be discreet. I don't want the giants to know you were ever there. And this warning, Samira. Your magic hijab will be of no use in Jotunheim. On their own turf, giants can see through that kind of magic. My hijab has the ability to camouflage me and one other person. Being hidden from enemies had come in handy in the past. Not this time, though, it seemed. I nodded to show my understanding, then departed with the photo and body cam. Minutes later, I was winging over the Earth Giant's land on a horse made of mist. I'd been to parts of Jotunheim before and used familiar landmarks, like the crumbled ruins where a particularly nasty family of giants once lived, to get my bearings. When I didn't see any eggs or nests in that zone, I expanded my search parameters. Finally, I saw the nest perched on a hilltop surrounded by a forest. It matched the photo Odin had shown me, a thatchwork of leaves, sticks, grass, and what I really hoped wasn't human hair, but was much bigger in person, about the size of an above-ground swimming pool. The bowl of the nest was deep. If the egg was inside, I couldn't see it. I nudged the horse downward and dismounted in a distant clearing. The horse took one look at the trees and bolted back into the sky. I couldn't blame her. The trees were unbelievably creepy, pitch black and gnarled, with thick ropey vines twisting throughout their branches. As I walked past one loop of vines swinging in the wind, I recalled the forest's name from an old picture book about Jotunheim. Gallows Wood. I shuddered and kept walking to the hill. Get a grip, Sam, I scolded myself. They're just... Oh, Helheim, I cursed, dropping into a crouch. Coming over the far side of the hill was a giant. He was skyscraper tall. Muscles bulged beneath his dark shirt and pants. His receding salt-and-pepper hair was shorn tight to his skull. Interestingly, he had a golden harp dangling from his belt instead of a weapon. I crossed my fingers and hoped that he was just passing through. But he settled on the nest like a mother hen, carefully tucking the harp in next to him. "Play," he commanded. The harp immediately plucked out a tune. The giant cleared his throat and sang along. I am Egther, protector of the egg. If you dare come near me, I will break your leg. My mouth turned dry. Had the giant seen me? Gouge out both your eyes and punch you in the throat. Squeeze you dry into a cup to make a blood beer float. Despite the horrific lyrics, I relaxed. The you in Egthur's song didn't seem specific to me. I hoped. Still, I was in a quandary. So long as the minstrel of Gallows Wood sat on the egg, I couldn't snap my photo. With Egthur's rousing refrain ringing in my ears, bash, maim, squish, splat, pound and kick until you're flat. I backtracked silently into the woods to consider my options. 1. I could return to Valhalla and explain to Odin why I'd failed. 2. I could ask Egthur to pose for a photo with the egg. 3. I could try bashing Egthur before he bashed me. I was leaning toward option 2 when Egthur stopped singing and started snoring. I risked a peek. He was fast asleep, chin on his chest, and a line of drool dribbling from his mouth. Unfortunately, he was still sitting on the egg. That ruled out option 3, for while I could now easily bash him, I wouldn't have a prayer of moving his body off the nest. I'm strong, but not that strong. Then my gaze landed on the harp. Seeing it reminded me of an old fairy tale, Jack and the Beanstalk. The giant in that story had a self-playing golden harp, too. When Jack stole the harp, it alerted the giant by playing loudly. I always hated the harp for that. I was willing to bet Egthur's harp would do the same. I formed a plan. Using the vines, I'd sneak up, rope the harp, and fly off with it. My nebulous horse would have been ideal for this part, but I can fly on my own in short bursts. The harp would sing out. Hopefully. The giant would wake up and chase after it. Probably. And I'd drop the harp, circle back, snap the egg pick, and hightail it back to Asgard. Amazingly, everything went according to plan. Right up until it didn't. The problem? Golden harps are heavy. Like, really, really heavy. When I pulled the rope to lift it, it wouldn't budge. Luckily, it didn't play either, though I detected a bit of sleepy humming. I took that as a good sign that if, when, I dislodged it, it would sing out an alarm. I retreated back to Gallows Wood to ponder the problem. You know how you think you'll never use math and science outside of school? Well, an eighth grade physics lesson about moving heavy objects with a rope saved the day. Basically, a heavy object can be shifted by attaching one end of a rope to the object, the other to a fixed, immovable object, and then pulling on the rope's center point. One end of my vine rope was already looped around the harp. I tied the other around a stout tree at the bottom of the hill. Then I wrapped my hijab around my waist like a harness, tied it to the rope's midpoint, and backpedaled until the rope formed a taut V. According to physics, if I pulled hard enough, the harp would move. "Here goes nothing," I muttered. I faced the inside of the V so I could keep an eye on the harp and the giant. Then I threw myself back into the harness, like the anchor on a tug-of-war team. My legs pushed against the earth, muscles straining. The harp rocked slightly, made an ominous thrumming sound, and then settled back into place. Cursing, I tried again. My foot slipped and I fell. Rubbing my tailbone, I gave myself a quick pep talk. "Come on, Al-Abbas. You can do this. You can..." I paused in mid-pep. Something was coming around the hill. Something big and hairy and fast. Something in butt-hugging leather shorts. And it was coming right toward me. "Thor!" I yelled frantically. Stop! Or at least detour! He didn't hear me. I scrabbled frantically at the knot in my hijab. It came loose a split second before Thor barreled up. In one motion, I put the hijab back over my head and dove to one side. His foot caught the rope, but he didn't break stride. Twang! The rope went taut, popping the tree out of the ground like a cork from a champagne bottle. The harp burst out of the nest at the same time. Well, that worked, I said. As I'd hoped, the harp's strings began plucking out a frantic alarm. The volume increased as it bounced along the ground behind Thor and left Egthyr behind. Egthyr woke up.
Hey! He yelled. That's mine!
He jumped up and gave chase. I flew into the air to make sure the giant stayed focused on the thunder god instead of me. From my vantage point, I was treated to a truly bizarre sight. Thor puffing along, the tree and the harp bouncing behind him. Egthyr trying to snatch the instrument in the air while bellowing threats. If you'd like to see it for yourself, feel free to take a look at the Valkyrie Vision video I accidentally shot. With Egthyr safely out of the way, I checked on the egg. Not a crack anywhere on its bright red shell. I was no bird expert, but I figured that meant Fjallar wasn't hatching anytime soon. I was tempted to fly back to Asgard with it so we could keep a close watch on the future Rooster of Doom. But I knew it wouldn't make a difference. Fjallar would hatch in Jotunheim as foretold, and it would crow someday. And Ragnarok would come. So, I did what I was sent to do. Say cheese!
Helheim. Nice Doggy by Thomas T.J. Jefferson, Jr. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I flumped back onto the battered sofa of Floor 19's lounge and patted my stomach. Centarpio's pizza is worth sneaking out for. I reached for another slice. You've had plenty. Mallory dropped the pizza box lid over the remains and stood up. I'm taking this to Halfborn. He's been holed up in his room all day doing who knows what. Probably forgot to eat. The big Dumbo. Catch you later. I gave her a lazy wave, then stretched out on the sofa with a sigh of contentment, my trusty rifle and bone steel bayonet by my side. The warmth from the fire flickering in the hearth enveloped me like a soft blanket. My eyelids grew heavy. I dozed off and, as my mother used to say, fell into dreamland. At least, that's where I thought I'd fallen. But the desolate rocky terrain, the bone-chilling dampness, the low moaning carried by the wind, they seemed too real to be just a dream. Real and frightening. Somehow, I had entered another world. I'd heard that eating pizza before bedtime can cause nightmares, but I didn't think it could transport a person. Then I heard a yell. Coming through! I spun to see Thor charging toward me like a runaway locomotive, arms pumping and leather Daisy Duke shorts riding up where the sun don't shine. Dream or no, I wasn't stupid enough to stand in the way of that. I leaped back as he blew past me and then scrambled away even farther to avoid being clubbed by something bouncing along behind him. A tree. And was that a harp on a long rope attached to his ankle, near as I could make out? Well, I murmured. That just happened. I watched as Thor zigzagged through a hard scrabble landscape at the base of a jagged outcropping. Suddenly, there was a sharp bark. An enormous hound emerged from a cliff-top cave far above Thor. As big as a Mack truck, with black fur dotted with red splotches, the dog stared down at the oblivious god and his toys on a rope, panting, with an open-mouthed dog smile on its face. It barked again, joyfully, I thought, then chased after Thor and the tree. Flecks of red dripped off its body as it picked its way down the steep incline. I suddenly realized what the red splotches were. Blood. The hound's muzzle, fur, and paws were stained with it. Recognition clicked in my brain as first Thor and then the hound disappeared in the distance. I stumbled back onto the nearest boulder and sat down hard. Garm, I said aloud to myself, the guardian dog of Helheim, and your father's killer. A woman spoke close to my ear. I whirled around. A kaleidoscope of color spun and twisted before my eyes. When it cleared, I was no longer standing in a barren moonscape, but in a grand hall next to a throne made out of charred logs. Gray drapes hung from the ceiling to the polished black marble floor. Grotesque bronze statues, the bodies contorted in postures of agony, sorrow, and terror, lined one wall. More statues lined the opposite wall, but these were rendered to express joy, love, and humor. I chose to look at that side. A figure in a hooded ermine cloak appeared on the throne. The woman's voice spoke again. You're not dreaming, Inherye, but having a vision. You're here in mind, not in body, and seeing recent events I've chosen for you to see. She pushed back the hood and smiled. Oh, I said. Hell. I'd seen my share of horrors during the war between the states, rotting corpses torn apart by scavenger birds, legless soldiers staring dead-eyed at the sky, bloated, waterlogged remains floating in stagnant ponds. The right half of Hell's face beat them all. Blackened teeth, cataract-filmed eye, pocked skull, open ear hole, not even the beauty of her left side, and it was stop you dead in your tracks beautiful, could offset the horror of her ghoulish half. She snapped her skeletal fingers. Double doors at the far end of the hall blew open. Two demons dragged a ghostly woman in chains before the throne and forced her to kneel. The woman lifted her head and glared daggers at Hell. I sucked in a sharp breath. The woman was my mother. My sweet mother who sang me to sleep and smelled like warm cornbread and butter. I hadn't seen her for more than 100 years. I choked back a sob. Mom? My mother's gaze didn't waver from Hell, and I remembered that my body was back on the hotel couch. To see her after so long, and for her not to see or hear me, it just about broke my heart. Hell noted my reaction and smiled. Oh, good. You still have feelings for her.
Feelings for who?
My mother demanded.
Who are you talking to?
Hell ignored her. So you won't want her to suffer, she said to me. I stared at Hell with loathing. Of course I don't.
Who is going to suffer?
My mother cried. Then come to me, Inherye, Hell said. In the flesh, I have a job that only a child of Tyr can do. Oh, and don't tell a soul, or she will pay. Hell inclined her head. The demons pulled the chains in opposite directions. My mother's body spasmed in pain, but her eyes never left Hell's face, and she didn't cry out. I did. I woke up on the sofa drenched in sweat, with the scream still in my throat, and the vision of my mother suffering in my mind's eye.
Hang on, Mom. I'm coming.
I grabbed my rifle and bayonet, ran down the hallway, and banged on Alex's door. I need tree access, I bellowed. When Alex opened the door, I pushed past and shinnied up the trunk of the world tree, searching for a branch to take me to Helheim.
Yark!
Ratatosk, the evil giant squirrel, was lying in wait. It let out a stream of insults that pummeled me like body blows to the psyche. You couldn't help her when you were alive. You won't save her now that you're dead. Your friends mock you for hiding behind that ridiculous bayonet. They think you're stupid, weak, brainless. I kept moving despite the barrage, but my thoughts sank deeper and deeper into a black pit of despair. Suddenly, the insults ceased. I tumbled through an opening and a branch into Hell's grand hall, for real, this time. Hell was on her throne, but my mother and the demons were nowhere to be seen. I see you discovered the key. The despair that Ratatosk induces helps one gain access to my world, the goddess said. Now kneel before me, inhere ye. I hesitated, then did as the goddess of the dishonorable dead commanded, for my mother's sake. She studied me. You are aware that my hellhound Garm will devour your father, Tyr, when Ragnarok is unleashed? I nodded. As Tyr's spawn, you have his blood in your veins. I nodded again, wondering where this was going. Well, Garm has run off, she told me. You, son of Tyr, are the only one who can find him. Or rather, she treated me to a ghastly smile. He will find you. I don't follow. Why? It's very simple. My hellhound will smell the blood of Tyr and come running. I clutched my rifle more tightly. So basically, you're using me as bait? More like a moving target, Hell amended. Why me? I dared to ask. Why not just, I don't know, poof Garm back to his cave yourself, or send your demons to retrieve him? Garm can be elusive, she said evasively. He's run off before, and past attempts to bring him home with magic and demons have failed. I was going to suggest she use a hellhound whistle, but I thought better of it. If you don't mind my asking, why not just let him stay lost? Hell's expression darkened. And risk word getting out that my dog is beyond my control? No. There is only one solution. You must lure him back to his cave. I scowled. Let me guess. If I refuse, you torture my mother. If I tell anyone Garm didn't come when you called, you torture my mother. Oh, yes. And Thomas? TJ, if you think killing Garm will stop the hound from killing your father, think again. You cannot stop destiny. Now, away you go. The double doors blew open. I shouldered my rifle and set off to search for a lost dog in the land of the dishonorable dead. One thing my earlier vision failed to reveal? The doomed residents of Helheim. As I crossed the landscape, their ghostly forms swirled and brushed up against me, as if sensing I didn't belong in their afterlife. Most drifted off when I ignored them. But one ghost refused to leave me alone. It poked me repeatedly with something prickly. Listen, pal, I snapped, turning to confront him. I don't know what your deal is, but my voice died when I saw who'd been irritating me. The god Baldur, the son of Odin and Frigg. Baldur had been greatly beloved and supposedly invulnerable to all forms of attack. But he had one weakness. Mistletoe. Loki had tricked Baldur's blind brother, Hod, into killing Baldur with a mistletoe arrow, the same arrow he was now jabbing me with. Hi, I said. Anytime you want to stop doing that is fine by me. Baldur smiled. And I suddenly understood why the worlds had mourned his death. Young and handsome, with a mop of dark brown hair, sparkling blue eyes, and killer dimples on either side of his impish smile, Balder radiated warmth and good humor. Being near him made me feel happy. Plain and simple as that. Hi, you're Tears, kid, right? I shouldn't have been startled that he could speak. After all, I'm dead too, and I can talk just fine. But I near about jumped out of my skin when he did. Sorry about the poking, Balder went on. We don't get many full-bodied visitors down here. That's why I followed you. But when you didn't react right away, I wasn't sure you were real. I rubbed my sore arm. I'm real. I'm glad, Balder said with another warm smile. I always admired Tyr. Not because he let Fenris Wolf chomp off his hand while tying up that demon dog, but for how he handled himself with Odin and Thor. I nodded to show my understanding. Long, long ago, Tyr had been the chief god of war. Over time, though, Odin and Thor rose in popularity and edged him out. My dad could have mounted an attack to regain his position, but he recognized the turmoil that civil war would have caused. So instead, he stepped back and let Odin and Thor remain in power. Plus, Balder added, Tyr was one of the few gods who didn't throw things at me to test my invulnerability. I always appreciated that. Enough to save him from being devoured by Garm? I asked hopefully. Balder shook his head. I can't stop Garm from killing your father any more than I could stop this mistletoe arrow from killing me. If you don't mind my asking, why do you still have that thing? Balder pulled a face. I tried to get rid of the arrow when I first got here. Burned it, buried it, crushed it with a rock, lost it accidentally on purpose. Nothing worked. It always reappeared back here. He pointed to his chest. Now I just carry it around. In my hand, he added for clarity. It gets in the way, otherwise. I can see how it would. And did the poison in the mistletoe ever make you sick? He looked at me with surprise. Poison? Well, yeah, I said, equally surprised that he didn't know. Mistletoe is poisonous. There was this old hound dog that used to hang around my regiment. One day it ate some mistletoe and I broke off. And what? Balder asked anxiously. The dog didn't die, did it? I hate stories where the dog dies. No, but my mind was whirling. It started walking funny and drooling and throwing up. I turned to him. Balder, I need your help. I told him about Garm, Thor, and my quest to find Hell's dog and save my mother from torture. Balder shook his head. I'm sorry, son of Tyr. I want to help you, but Hell would never permit me to intervene. Not you, that. I pointed to his arrow. If Garm eats it, it might stop him. Not kill him, I added quickly. Just incapacitate him. It's true Garm wouldn't be killed, not here in Hell's realm, but if he ingests the mistletoe, Balder said, maybe he won't feel like ingesting you. Bonus, I agreed. A loud baying cut through the stillness. A second later, Garm bounded over a hilltop. He sniffed the air and swiveled his massive head in my direction. The Hound of Helheim had smelled me out. I grabbed Balder's arrow. You wouldn't happen to have a bow on you, by any chance? Sorry, fresh out. Right. Special delivery it is, then. I gripped my rifle in one hand and the arrow in the other. Wish me luck. I can't. Hell wouldn't approve. I didn't wait for Garm to come to me any more than I'd waited for Johnny Reb back in the war. Yelling at the top of my lungs, I ran full force at the hellhound. Garm snarled and pounced. His blood-stained jaws opened wide, giving me an up-close and personal view of his doggy uvula. I darted toward him,
intending to shove the mistletoe into his mouth. His jaws snapped shut before I could, nearly taking off my hand when they did. Then my battle training at Hotel Valhalla kicked into high gear. I spun away before he could take another bite, then jabbed my bayonet into his backside. He yelped, loud enough to wake the dead. I pulled my bone steel bayonet free and raced off in search of cover while he whirled in a circle trying to lick his wound. I spotted a ditch and jumped in. Flattening myself against the side, I plotted my next attack. I'd gotten as far as avoid the snapping jaws when I was enveloped in a blast of hot breath. I looked up to find Garm panting down at me, his drool-slick tongue hanging like a thick, wet blanket. Gross! I rolled away just as that tongue tried to lap me up. Springing to my feet, I scrambled out of the trench and took a running leap onto Garm's neck and immediately slipped on his blood-soaked fur and slid down the other side. I nicked him with the arrow, though, which must have been irritating, for he plunked down on his butt and vigorously scratched at his neck with his back paw. Meanwhile, I ran across the field and hid behind a massive 2-story-tall boulder where I took stock of my situation. The straight-on attack had failed. Hiding in the ditch had been nearly fatal. So maybe it was time to take the high ground. Right, I growled. This ends now. One side of the boulder offered decent hand and footholds. Silently thanking Hotel Valhalla for installing a climbing wall, I slung my rifle over my shoulder, stuck the arrow through my belt, and scaled my way to the top. Hey, you overgrown puggle, I bellowed from my perch. How about a nice, tasty, tear-flavored treat? Yeah? You want a piece of me? Garm stopped scratching and started snarling. He padded over and circled the boulder. He tried to scramble up, but his paws couldn't find purchase. Looks like you're going hungry tonight, I taunted. Garm growled with frustration. Then, eyes locked on me, he backed away and got into a crouch. I crouched too, slipping the arrow from my belt as I did. Then I waited. Not for very long. With a loud howl, Garm charged. When he reached the boulder, he pounced. His muscular back legs sent him flying up the side straight at me, paws reaching out and mouth yawning wide. At the last possible second, I stepped to the side. Then, with a cry of fury, I jammed the arrow straight down his gullet, yanking my hand free just before his teeth crushed it. My attack threw him off balance, and he landed with a flop on top of the boulder. While he scrabbled to get his footing, I leaped to the ground and ran like Helheim back to where I'd first seen him, the rocky outcrop I assumed was his cave. At first, Garm chased me at top speed. I stayed one step ahead with a combination of wily zigzagging maneuvers I'd perfected over centuries of combat on Valhalla's battlefield. That and sheer dumb luck. But slowly, the hellhound fell behind. I risked a look back. Garm's mouth foamed as the mistletoe's poison went to work. By the time we reached his cave, he was a wobbling, whimpering mess. I kind of felt bad for him. All sympathy vanished when he threw up. Thankfully, it didn't splash on me, but the smell was really, really disgusting. Garm tottered into his cave, fell onto his doggy bed of crushed bones, and began snoring. Balder wandered in then. Ignoring the puke, he pried open the dog's jaws, waded into its throat, and retrieved his arrow. So I can wash it off before I wake up with it sticking out of my chest, he explained. He was about to say something else, but whatever it was, I didn't hear it because Hell chose that moment to send me back to Valhalla. I had no idea whether she would keep her promise to spare my mother. I got my answer that night. The goddess of death visited me in a dream.
A job well done, son of Tyr, she said. Your mother is safe. I may even grant you permission to visit her from time to time. Warring emotions bubbled up in my gut, then anger at